Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you're thinking that a job in the video game industry is all fun and games, think again. Journalist Jason Schreier can tell you the truth. He's the author of Press Reset, Ruin and Recovery in the Video Game Industry. In his book, Jason uncovers the dark side of working in the video game industry. He shares the real stories of the human cost that go into popular video games. Creators, engineers, and producers have to work mandatory overtime for weeks and even months on end. And when they least expect it, the studios they are toiling for suddenly shut down. Many workers have to upend their lives by moving across the country. Some even decide to leave the industry. We'll press start on this interview to find out more.
You're almost there. The Sphere to Orion is up on ahead.
Jason, what is the central question that you're trying to answer in your book, Press Reset?
The big question that I set out to ask is, why is the video game industry so volatile, and what kind of effect does that have on people in it? I've also been hearing that the games industry is unsustainable in a lot of ways, that it's bad for people, that it's volatile, that it really chews people up. So this book kind of tried to answer the question, why? What happens to people when something like that happens?
Mm-hmm. How big a problem is this volatility?
I think it's a very big one. You hear a lot about games developers burning out, leaving the industry entirely as a result of having to just kind of shift jobs constantly, move cities constantly whenever they are laid off or lose their jobs. And it's a constant thing. It's a very hit-driven industry. But it's not just that. It's also a very an industry full of wealth disparity. And there's a lot of money being made, but not a lot of money going to the people who actually make the games.
Can you quickly walk us through the lifespan of a console video game?
Sure, yeah. So the way that kind of the development cycle works is a team might start pretty small, just have some ideas on paper, maybe start making some prototypes on a computer. It'll usually be a year or two of what's called pre-production, where you're kind of figuring out what the game's going to look like. Then maybe you'll do another year or two of production. You expand your team and start working on that game and really producing the content and features for it. At the end of things, you might, if you're kind of a typical what's called AAA big budget video game, you'll probably be spending tens of millions of dollars, and you'll probably have hundreds, if not thousands, of people working on this thing. And it'll ship maybe 3-4 years of development, and then it comes out, and hopefully if you're lucky, it makes a bunch of money and allows you to keep working and keep making more games. But if you're less lucky, then that doesn't happen, and maybe the publisher behind your game says, oh, we can't keep funding you anymore, and suddenly there's a mass layoff or a studio shutdown. So as you can see, I mean, the risks are very high in terms of the amount of money that is spent on these things. So it's easy to see why this is such a hit-driven business.
Sometimes one of the most surprising things I learned from reading your book is that sometimes they'll just cancel a game and move on to something else. Can you talk a bit about that?
Sure, yeah. I mean, games are canceled all the time. Usually it's before they're even announced, so it's before people have really heard about them and got a chance to be excited about them. But yeah, no, it happens quite a bit. It can be canceled for all sorts of reasons. Games can be canceled for all sorts of reasons. Sometimes it's because they're running into production troubles and the game just is not shaping up the way it needs to be shaping up. Sometimes it's because of a management shift, and we've seen that in a lot of areas of the corporate world. When a new CEO takes over, a new board of directors take over, they want to put their own mark on things. So they might reevaluate the whole portfolio and cut anything they don't think fits with what their vision is. So that can happen too. And yeah, I mean, it's a problem of market forces where what you started something in 2020, and because games take 4 years to make, what you started in 2020 thinking that it would be hot then suddenly is no longer as potentially commercially viable in 2024 by the time it actually comes out. So yeah, there are a lot of reasons that a game could potentially be canceled despite the money that is sunk into these things.
Yeah, and that this practice doesn't seem to happen in other entertainment industries, does it? Not to the extent it does in video games.
So yeah, I mean, I think that the risks are much higher in games because it straddles the border of art and technology. And what I mean by that is that it's got the kind of artistic sensibilities of film. And so you're making something that like could be good, could not be, could be not so good. And you don't, you might not really know until that thing is actually done. And it's all very subjective and people, it might resonate with audiences and it might not. And you don't really know until you put it out there, combined with technology, which is like, it has to work and the software has to be just constantly developed and fine-tuned and iterated upon. And that aspect of it, it requires just like a lot of people, a lot of engineers, a lot of designers, a lot of artists just throwing themselves at this game and working full time for a very long time. Long story short, the amount of money that you're spending on these things is not just like all channeled into 3 months of shooting or whatever. It's more like years and years of paying people salaries. So it's easier to see why a game company might say, okay, do we really want to commit another 2 years to this project or should we just cut our losses?
The question is that the Marcane itself that they're shooting into that ankle or blood from the shots? But like a scene from The Natural, Schilling climbs the mound and prepares to take on this Yankee lineup.
In a surprising second career act, Hall of Fame pitcher Curt Schilling got into the video game industry. His experience was pretty tumultuous and kind of serves as a cautionary tale in game creation. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I mean, so he's quite a character, Curt Schilling. He was the former pitcher for the Red Sox, among other teams, and he led the Red Sox to the World Series, of course, and he always loved games. He always loved specifically MMORPGs, which are big worlds, open world games full of people, massively multiplayer online games. And when he finished his career, he said, hey, I'm going to take on World of Warcraft and make the next big MMO.
You are but a plaything, unfit even to amuse.
Things did not work out so well in general. When you don't know anything about game development and you start a company and you you think you're going to take on one of the biggest games in the world, things are probably not going to go well for you, unfortunately.
As you know, in the past, I have raised many concerns regarding the 38 Studios deal. When it became clear that the company would not survive, I publicly stated my commitment to you that my primary goal would be to do everything within my power to protect the taxpayers of Rhode Island.
So what happened was he was looking for money for a very long time, and they were based in Massachusetts, and he happened to get connected to the governor of Rhode Island to set up a plan for the company to move to Rhode Island in exchange for a loan guarantee of $75 million. And yeah, they all wound up moving. Everybody in the company wound up moving to Rhode Island, where the state of Rhode Island hoped they would be the beginnings of a tech cluster, but things did not go as planned. About a year later, they were shut down.
The people working in the video game industry often have to work in crunch mode. What is crunch?
Yeah, well, so crunch is kind of a colloquial games industry term for working excessive overtime. And by excessive overtime, I don't mean like, hey, we got to work late this week. It's months and months of just 6 day weeks, long hours, maybe 12 hour days. People just have described all sorts of just tough schedules, 60, 70, 80 hour weeks for months on end. And in the games industry, I mean, you think of crunch time, it kind of sounds like, all right, this is it, the end of a thing, it's crunch time. But in the games industry, it's actually not just at the end of a project when this will happen. Oftentimes you go through this kind of period of excessive overtime just to hit a normal deadline over the course of your project. And a lot of games companies actually build in a period of crunch into their schedule, like expecting everybody to work those extra hours. So it's very much an epidemic thing and very much a standard part of the games industry, something that the games industry seems to embrace, although there have been efforts in recent years to try to make things better.
Well, why is it legal?
That's a good question. I mean, here in the U.S., at least, labor laws have been so weakened that I'm not sure that there's anything anyone can do. But yeah, I mean, and the other part of the equation, by the way, I should say, is that a lot of these people, many of them are paid salaries, so they're not actually getting paid for those extra hours. I mean, as anyone who is on an annual salary knows, that doesn't reflect the number of hours you work in a given week. You're just kind of expected to do your job. And that is often the case in the games industry, where people are putting in these hours and not getting paid for each one. They are getting paid their kind of standard annual salaries, and more than a few people have kind of like said with malaise that when they do the calculation of like their salary divided by the number of hours they work, it is depressing.
Mm-hmm. Video games are becoming more and more popular on our phones and tablets. Does producing video games for those platforms eliminate some of the crunch concerns?
No, because although sometimes making games on phones and tablets is shorter, as I mentioned earlier, it takes less time. It's more of a few months as opposed to a few years, depending on the game. The expectations are still pretty high, and there's still a culture in game development in general of working a lot of hours and also volatility. So no, unfortunately, even though there's a lot of promise and a lot of exciting stuff happening in the mobile game space, it hasn't proven to be a kind of cure-all for the industry's woes, unfortunately.
That's too bad. Are there any video game companies that are treating their employees well?
I'm sure there are, and well is a relative term, right? There are some that are treating their employees well for the games industry, and there's some that are treating some divisions well and others not. And like any other industry, it depends who your boss is and what the culture is like. And some people, I mean, I've talked to people who, we mentioned crunch before, and crunch is certainly an epidemic problem in the games industry, but there are companies out there that are loved by the people who work there, and they also have a heavy crunch culture, but people just kind of accept that and have nuanced feelings about it. Or maybe they feel like putting in those hours is the only way to achieve great things and make great art. So a lot of people have very complicated feelings about all this stuff. And so it really depends who you ask, whether they're happy at their company or not. But but I think a lot of the same problems kind of rear their heads at many, if not all, of these game studios.
Yeah. What do you think needs to happen in order for video game developers to be treated more humanely?
Yeah, well, one of the solutions I explore in Press Reset is unionization, which is something that has been talked about in the games industry, but still has not happened, at least in North America. In Europe is a different story. But in North America, there are no unions in the games industry. And it's kind of shocking to see that. It's kind of strange that that hasn't happened yet, because it feels like, I mean, obviously film is the easiest comparison. And a lot of the people who work in film, despite working also pretty wild hours, pretty crazy schedules sometimes, they can ensure themselves certain protections, making sure they get paid for every hour, making sure they get proper credit for their work, that sort of thing, in a way that game developers, game makers have not been able to do. I'm surprised that unions have not started to pop up in the games industry yet, but I think they will at some point.
Has writing this book affected your ability to enjoy playing video games?
No, I don't think so. I have kind of known about a lot of the industry's woes for many years now, and I'm also a big fan of games. So no, not really. I also tend to gravitate towards some like smaller games and indie games and games that aren't quite as much of a big production as some of the games that go through hell to be made. But no, I think that if you ask a game developer, even someone who feels like they really sacrificed a lot to make these games, I think most of them are proud of their work and want it to be enjoyed. They don't want all that crunch and hard work to go for naught. So I think that I don't think many people would want the player to feel guilty about enjoying any of these games.
Yeah.
It's something that I've been able to kind of detach the sausage making process from the enjoyment of the actual sausage. You just don't think about all the animal parts that went in there.
Exactly. Very well said. And you're too immersed, but because video games are so immersive, you're so focused on playing the game. Yeah.
Yeah.
Jason Trier, thank you very much for talking to me today. This has been very enlightening.
Yeah. Thanks, Doug.
Jason Schreier is the author of Press Reset, Ruin and Recovery in the Video Game Industry. Find out more at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Edgar Wright, Lauren Huff, and Jason Schreier. If you want to hear it again or binge on past episodes, subscribe to the Beta Podcast. It's available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Just search for WPR and Beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
You can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta or on Twitter at @WPRBeta. Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic!
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
He's one from the dark side of the lens.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
I'm immune to humiliation after that.
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta is coming your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
I think he's really clever.